Who do you obey? Who do you listen to? Sometimes we don't know what to do and would love someone just to tell us what to do, but most of the time, we don't like to be bossed about. I'm my own man or woman, we say. No one tells me what to do. You're not the boss of me. And if we don't say those things because we're too polite, too British, or we just don't want to look bad, then we still think them. We resist or resent being told what to do. So how do you react when God tells you what to do? Why should you obey him? Do you resist or resent or obey without grumble or grudge? Who do you obey? And this question of who do you obey is the one that really sits behind what's going on here in these chapters. Since chapter 5, when Moses first went to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's response was, chapter 5, verse 2, who is the Lord? Who is Yahweh? That I should obey him and let Israel go. I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. And of course, what Pharaoh's question's really stating is, what gives this God of slaves a right to issue commands to me, the king of Egypt, a living deity, a living God? And ultimately, it is God, not Moses, that Pharaoh is taking on. See that in chapter 6, verse 30, where Moses asks, God, you know, why would Pharaoh listen to me with faltering lips? And God replies, 7 verse 1, because I have made you like God to Pharaoh. And the issue, you see, is not whether Pharaoh will listen to Moses, but whether Pharaoh will listen to God. And in most of the plays, as you probably heard it read, Moses will confront Pharaoh with the words, "The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go, so that they may worship or serve me." And in those moments, Moses is like God before Pharaoh. He's God's representative. But Pharaoh will not listen. See verse 16 of chapter 7, until now you've not listened. Chapter 7, verse 13, Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to them. All the way through the plagues, that repetitive refrain just keeps coming. Pharaoh will not listen. He hardens his heart. His heart was hard. He was unyielding. Now, God's not surprised by Pharaoh's refusal to listen. He predicted it in chapter 3, verse 19. He predicts it again in chapter 7, verses 3 to 4. In fact, we're told there that God hardens Pharaoh's heart. Which then raises the question, why? Why do all of these plagues, knowing Pharaoh will not listen? I mean, why does God not just go to the 10th plague, the killing of the firstborns, the very plague that kind of sets his people free? Why do the first 9? Why the hardening of Pharaoh's heart? And to answer that question is to understand the purpose of all the plagues. So that's where we're going to start. And the answer comes at the outset of the 7th plague, the plague of hail. I wish it wasn't the plague of hail because I'm an Essex boy and I struggle to say the word hail. I just want to say hell or sell. And I'm having to really think hard. So if that's what my mouth is doing, you'll understand why. Have a look at chapter 9, verses 15 to 16. For by now, God says, I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth. But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. So through God's judgment on both Pharaoh and in turn Egypt, God will reveal himself so that his name might be proclaimed not just in Egypt, not just amongst Israel, but in all the earth. And so this is the reason behind both the mysterious hardening of Pharaoh's heart and then in turn the need for 9 plagues. So firstly then, the glory of God is revealed through the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. 5 times we're told that Pharaoh's heart became hard, was unyielding. See an example of that in chapter 7, verse 13. Yeah, Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen. 3 times we're told that Pharaoh hardened his heart. 8, verse 15. Good example. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart. So Pharaoh purposefully hardened his heart, purposely refused to listen. And there is a sense, isn't there, of madness to Pharaoh's actions. I mean, plague after plague is inflicted on Egypt. And it's horrific. There's blood everywhere. Everywhere you look, you know, you open a pot of water, there's blood. There's frogs in your bed. There's gnats and there's flies that bite. There's boils that are so sore that magicians can't even get out of their beds to see Moses. Livestock is killed, crops are devastated, and there's pitch black that you cannot even see your hand in front of your face. And yet Pharaoh refuses to submit. He keeps on inviting, as it were, more suffering on his country. He cannot concede because his pride is at stake. He's crazy. After the second plague of frogs, he says they can go, but then he suddenly changes his mind. He does something similar after the 4th and the 8th and the 9th plague. Pharaoh, as it were, kind of cries mercy. Do you ever remember playing that game as kids where you forced each other's hands back, fingers back, until someone said mercy, and then you let them go? Or if you want, you just pushed it a little bit further. But that's what's happened here. Pharaoh's going, mercy, mercy. And the Lord then, you know, Moses comes, and then Pharaoh tries to bargain his way out. He negotiates with Moses, so he offers some concessions. Well, maybe you can just go and offer some sacrifices, chapter 8. Or maybe the next time he goes, well, you can worship in the wilderness, but just not too far away, chapter 8, 28. Then he says, actually, you can go, chapter 9. Then he says, well, actually, hold on, why don't we just let the men go, leave the women and the children, chapter 10. Then he says, actually, you can all go, but leave the livestock. And then after each, he changes his mind. Hardened his heart further against the Lord. Eventually, in chapter 10, verse 28, after the 9th plague, Pharaoh says to Moses, get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die. And at this point, we're seeing Pharaoh, in effect, banishing God because Moses was like God to him. And God gives him what he wants. 10, verse 29, Moses says, just as you say, I will never appear before you again. And the tragedy is that Moses is Pharaoh's only hope. But Pharaoh is choosing to reject, to not listen. He believes the lie, the deceit of sin. He believes he's in charge. He believes he is powerful. He somehow thinks he will win in the end. It's just a run of bad luck. He stubbornly, doggedly continues. He will not humble himself. But friends, that's what sin does to us, isn't it? We believe the lies. We can't see the foolishness of it, the craziness of it. You see that in our culture and thinking today. You take the issue of abortion. A mother aborts her baby, it's not murder, but if someone else harms the baby in her womb, causing it death, the perpetrator is charged with murder. Same baby. When you look at that objectively, it's tragically nonsensical. Take the issue of gender. I mean, we don't allow our children to drink alcohol or vote till they're 18 or drive cars till they're 17, but we do allow at whatever age, 3 or 4 upwards, for them to choose what gender they be. It's crazy. At the personal level, we carry on sinful habits, anger and greed and bitterness and grumpiness, and we tell ourselves it's not a problem, even when everyone is telling us it is, and even when we feel that relationships are being broken. But that's what sin does. That's what happens when you don't listen to God, when you don't want to obey. And in the end, like he did with Pharaoh, the more we reject, he gives us over to what we want, Romans 1. And you end up rejecting the very one you desperately need. And but for the grace of God, opening my eyes, opening your eyes, we would behave and think, and at still times still do, in nonsensical ways, rejecting Christ. And here is Pharaoh making those crazy, nonsensical choices, personally hardening his heart, rejecting truth, proud, stubborn. And he alone is responsible for his hard heart. But of course, there is more going on than this, because remember that God's purpose in the nine plagues is to reveal his name. So we learn as well that God has purposefully hardened Pharaoh's heart. Five times we're told that God hardens Pharaoh's heart. You see it in chapter 7, verse 3. I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. So on one level, Pharaoh refuses to listen because Pharaoh hardens his heart, but it's also true that Pharaoh refuses to listen because the Lord hardens his heart. And you have to hold both things as true. Pharaoh determines Pharaoh's actions. God determines his actions. Put it another way, Pharaoh freely chooses to do what God had freely chosen that he would do. And there's a mystery involved in understanding how both of those truths hold together. And if you want to think about it some more, then listen to the sovereignty series that we did earlier this year online. But for now, we need to see Pharaoh hardened his heart, responsible and guilty. At the same time, the other side of the coin, God hardened his heart. That may raise a question for you. Isn't that unfair? Isn't that unjust? And we need to remember the Bible makes it clear that God is perfectly just and righteous. He always does what is right, even when I cannot understand his purposes. And Paul the Apostle in Romans chapter 9 tackles this very issue. He uses the very example of Pharaoh and he quotes Exodus 9 verse 15. And he writes in response, Romans 9 verse 18, therefore God has mercy on whom he wants to have mercy and he hardens whom he wants to harden. And then Paul writes, quoting Isaiah, who are you, a human being, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? In other words, this is not for us to question God's purposes. We're to listen, trusting he is good and right and just. And part of his purpose that both Paul emphasizes and Exodus makes clear is that through God's judgment on Pharaoh, he will be made known. His glory will be revealed in judgment. And what is clear is that God planned 10 plagues so that he could display his power and his glory and his majesticness. And that is why he hardened Pharaoh's heart. And the workings of that are mysterious, but its purposes are clear. The glory of God will be revealed through the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, and the glory of God is revealed through the plagues. See, there are nine plagues in what we're looking at. They're three mini cycles. And as the plagues go on, they increase in intensity from blood, where no one is harmed, to livestock being killed, to people being killed, hail, to ultimately the tenth, where the firstborns are killed. The severity, the feeling of God's judgment increases as well. Each plague has a similar structure to it. So in six out of the nine plagues, Moses confronts Pharaoh. Only the gnats, the boils, and the darkness he does not. And those three fall at the end of each mini cycle. So it goes confront, confront, not confront, 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 not confront, etc. He uses similar languages, particularly this phrase, let my people go. And throughout the plagues, another repetitive refrain is that of God being made known. So chapter 7, verse 5, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. 7, verse 17, by this you will know that I am the Lord. 8, verse 10, that you may know there is no one like the Lord our God. 9, verse 14, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. 9, verse 16, that I might show my power and that by my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. What will be known? What will be seen? That God alone is the one true God. God alone is the one true God. See, Pharaoh believed in a God. In fact, he believed in many gods. Sun gods, river gods, harvest gods. Go to the British Museum and look at the Egyptian display and you'll see the gods they worshipped. Pharaoh's issue was not, there is no God, but why should I listen to the Hebrew God when I got my own gods and I myself am a God? And in the plagues, as it were, God, as it were, goes head to head with the gods of Pharaoh. God is declaring he is the only true God, the only relevant God. He is the only God who is worth obeying and listening to. The nine plagues systematically undermine the gods of Egypt. It's previewed in the introductory warning in chapter 7, verse 9, where Aaron's staff turns into a snake. No problem for Pharaoh. The Egyptian magicians can do the same through trickery, sleight of hand, not spiritual powers. But Moses and Aaron's snake eats their snake, 7, verse 12. Snakes were a fundamental part of Egyptian religion. The world was created by a sun god who took the form of a snake. In fact, on Pharaoh's headpiece was a snake. And so as Moses and Aaron's snake eats their snake, it's a preview. Egypt's gods will be destroyed by the one true God. And the pattern continues. Happy was the god of fertility and closely associated with the Nile. Without the river Nile, there was no fertility in Egypt. There was no Egypt. There was no life. The Lord turns the Nile into blood. The river stinks. Fish die. Everywhere there is water, there is blood. It's a picture of death. There is only one who gives and takes away life, and it's not Happy. Heket, another fertility goddess, had the head of the frog. But the frogs are the Lord's to command. When he does, they go everywhere. In the bedrooms, in the ovens, in the kneading troughs, on them. As you slept, you woke with a frog on your head. Pharaoh asked them to be removed. God says, when? 8 verse 9. Pharaoh says, tomorrow. The God who commands them does it at that precise time. The frogs all die or return to the Nile. The land reeked of them. Bulls and cows were another symbol of fertility. Other gods, Apis, Menes, and none of them could resist the plague of the livestock. But the animals belonging to the Israelites did not die. 9 verse 6. And Pharaoh goes and investigates. Was it just bad luck that our animals died and the Israelites didn't? Oh no, there's the one true God at work. Sekhmet, the lion-headed goddess, would have been expected to heal the boils but can't. Nut, the sky goddess, could not prevent the plague of hail, nor stop the east wind that brought the locusts. Each day Re, the sun god, was thought to sail through the celestial sea in a boat. Then at night he would descend into the netherworld before rising victorious at dawn. But during the ninth plague, he didn't rise. 3 days of darkness were a clear sign that he had been defeated. See, before the God of the Hebrews, all other gods are powerless. All pretenders are defeated. All blasphemers are silenced. And note the reaction of the Egyptian court throughout. The Egyptian magicians are able to replicate the first two plagues. Presumably they get a bit of blood in a bowl or make a few frogs appear. Striking though that they're unable to undo what the Lord had commanded, that would have been far more impressive. By the time of the third plague, the plague of the gnats everywhere, they no longer try and conclude, chapter 8, verse 19, this is the finger of God. This is of him. By the plague of boils, they are unable to stand, come before Moses. By the eighth plague, 10, verse 7, the locusts, they're begging Pharaoh to concede defeat. How long will this man be a snare to us? Irony abounds, isn't it? This one, Moses, whose people we're ensnaring and trapping, is now trapping us. The plague struck at the very foundations of Egypt. The officials see this, 10 verse 7, Egypt is ruined. There's only one true God, and it's the God of Israel. And he is the God who is also the mighty, powerful creator. See, the Lord marshals the powers of creation against Pharaoh. He's using weapons only the creator can use. So sometimes we're told the source of the plague. Frogs come from the waters, 8 verse 6. The gnats from the dust of the ground. The hail and the darkness from the sky. The Lord uses all of creation, land and sea and sky. From the waters come frogs, from the ground gnats, from the air flies. All of creation is being mobilized against Pharaoh to make sure Pharaoh does not just think this is a natural phenomena. Most of the plagues are announced in advance, although every third plague comes without a warning, but just as the Lord had said. Four of the plagues mentioned tomorrow as a start or stop time. With the frogs, Pharaoh sets the time. With the flies, Moses sets the time. With the livestock and the hail, the Lord sets the time. With the first three plagues, Aaron's staff is used. With the last four plagues, Moses' staff or hands are used. With the middle two, God is the direct cause. God brings distinction between his people and Egypt. Egypt is covered in flies, but not Goshen, where the Israelites live. Egypt livestock die, but not Israel's. Egypt's in darkness, but not Goshen. In other words, the plagues are not random. They're at the very command of the Creator, the one true God. They happen in his timings, at his words, through his chosen servants, where he specifies. He's the Creator. He's the one true God. And God alone is the judge. See, in 9 verse 8, the boils come from the soot of the furnace, a brick kiln. So the source of Israel's oppression, the increase in bricks, 5 verse 19, now becomes the source of Egypt's judgment. The punishment fits the crime. And God throughout turns creation on itself. Water no longer brings life, but instead the stench of death. Animals used against humanity rather than for humanity. Light turns to darkness. God is judging Egypt and its stubborn king, revealing clearly, who is this Yahweh? The one true, powerful creator, Lord. The one who judges. And of course, in many ways, this is a picture of final judgment for us, isn't it? It's a picture that will happen not just to one nation and its king who opposes Yahweh and his people, but all nations and all kings who oppose Yahweh and his people. And on that final day, creation will turn. Destruction will come about. The pictures in the book of Revelation are not dissimilar to what is seen here in the plagues. There's blood and there's animals opposing and there's battles and there's wars. And yet it's tempting to think of that final day merely as a day of retribution, of punishment against those who have rejected. But that final day will also be a day of revelation and vindication. It'll be a day revealing the glory of God, where all will see, Just as the plagues revealed the glory of God, so that final day will reveal the glory of God. Philippians 2, doesn't it? Verses 10 to 11 tells us every knee will bow at the coming of King Jesus. Every tongue will acknowledge him. Why will they bow? Because on that day, they will see who the one true Lord is, who the one true God is, the Lord Jesus Christ. And there will be no doubt. There'll be no half-guessing or wondering or pondering. Is he the Lord? Is he just one Lord among many? No, all will see he alone is the Lord. And on that day, God's people will be vindicated. Will be vindicated for obeying and listening now. So even as the culture and the world mocks us and persecutes us and tells us we're bigoted and intolerant because we do not agree with their agendas or their gods, on that day, all the powers of this age, all the gods of this age will be shown for what they are: nothing, pretenders, blasphemers. And all will be judged and thrown into that great lake of fire, and it will be a terrible day. But it'll also be a day of victory and vindication for those who are Christ's, where we'll be proved right for obeying and listening and following Christ now. But more importantly, he, the Lord Jesus, will be seen to be the one true, living, victorious, majestic, with all praise and honor given to him. And friends, it might not feel like that often today. That sense of victory often eludes us. But on that day, all will see. And on that day, his glory will be revealed. And so the question we began with is still the question now. Who will you listen to? Who will you obey? You'll either do it now, voluntarily, willingly, or on that final day, every knee will bow. I wonder whether you noticed that although these are chapters of terrible judgment, throughout it's also seen God's wonderful mercy. I mean, his mercy is seen to his people. As we've seen, he distinguishes between them, but his mercy is also seen to Egypt. In six of the plagues, he warns, "Let my people go. If you refuse, this will happen." He gives a chance for Pharaoh to respond. In the plague of hail, the first plague, people may be harmed and killed. God warns, he says, 9 verse 19, "Give an order to get people and livestock inside." And we're told those Egyptians, verse 20, who feared the Lord's word did and were safe. Those who did not, their slaves and livestock died. Obey, listen, safe. Disobey, not listen, not safe. And even in that plague, there are funny two verses, chapter 9, verses 31 to 32. It just feels a little bit odd. Where suddenly you get these little brackets in ours where we're told that the flax and the barley were destroyed, but the wheat and the spelt were not, because they're not yet ripened. And you wonder, why are we told that? Because even as the Lord brings destruction through the hail and then the locusts, you're seeing his mercy. In that there would still be food, there'd be stuff to eat in the coming months. His common grace to them, even in the midst of his judgment. And of course, he keeps warning. There's nine plagues of warning before the final, tenth, devastating one. He's merciful. He wants all to be saved. And there were Egyptians who heard, and many would leave with Israel. And that same mercy is still here today. Similar ways, isn't he? God still provides. We read Acts 14, verse 17. Paul says, "Yet God has not left himself without testimony. He's shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their season. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy." I mean, the world wants to say, well, it's just evolution. It just comes about by chance. But the Bible is very clear. No, we eat because of God's goodness and grace. It's his provision to all. And of course, God still warns. 2 Peter 3 explains why God has not just ended the world now, because of his mercy. Because he's given people a chance to repent. He wants them to be able to hear the gospel, see what he's doing. Romans 8 tells us that creation is groaning for that day when things will be renewed. And part of the groaning is because creation is under God's judgment because of the fall, because of man's rebellion. Which I take it, it means that at times natural disasters were meant to see, as the insurance company calls them, acts of God. Part of his judgment on a fallen world. You're meant to see those things and think there is one true God. And of course, God's greatest revelation in judgment for us is seen at the cross, where the earth is covered in darkness once more in the middle of the day, as God pours out his judgment, not now on those who oppose him, but on his own Son who bears our punishment for our rebellion against the Creator, so that we would see and know who the one true God is, so that we would respond like that Roman centurion at the foot of the cross and say, indeed, this was the Son of God. See, even now today, we're meant to see and to hear and obey and listen and to not harden our hearts in pride and in stubbornness against the Lord. But we're to see he alone is the one true God. Not Islam, not Hinduism, not Buddhism, not materialism, not secularism, Yahweh. So will you listen? Will you see who God is and respond to his mercy by trusting in Christ? For the believer, you're to see the plagues. You're to see that your God acts. You're to see that great act of judgment on the cross and know there is a day of judgment coming when we will be vindicated and there will be victory for standing firm, for obeying until that day. And until that day, we keep going, we keep listening and we keep obeying and we keep seeking to bring glory to Christ in all that we do in light of his great mercy to us. And then like the persecuted saints under the altar in Revelation 6, we cry, how long, O Lord? How long? Who will you obey? Who will you listen to this morning, this week, this year?